on the Standing and Select Committees on Appropriations. I'm co-chairing with Honorable Dikeledi Mahlangu. You are all welcome. Are there any apologies? No.
Yes, Chair.
Oh, okay.
Good morning, co-chairpersons, honorable members and guests. We received from Standing Committee on Appropriations, we received one apology from Mr. Kwankwa. He has a doctor's appointment. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll note the apology.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, members. On behalf of the Select Committee on Appropriations, we have received two apologies from Mr. Dudoit and Mr. Matibe.
Thank you. Apologies noted. No other apology. We have got Parliamentary Budget Office presentation. So maximum it's 11, but if you want to give us more time so that you can have more time to interact reflect on your presentation, that'd be fine. But 11 o'clock maximum. So Parliamentary Budget Office, we are welcome with our presentation on the 2019 Appropriation Bill. Dr. Janchis and your team, introduce your team and then take us through the presentation.
Okay. Thank you. Morning, Honorable Chairperson, and morning, members. Just to remind you that we did not compile the adjusted after appropriations bill. We looked at the bill and we analyzed, and we're really trying to show you really things that we think is important for you to note.
Honourable Member, Peter?
Thank you, Chairperson. In the student and youth fraternity, they like saying a point of before. Chairperson, my apology. In the group, I saw an apology from Ms. Clara Dukali, and I noted that she's not yet here, and she did indicate that she's got another meeting that seems to be clashing with us. Thank you. I'm sorry for that.
No. Thank you. Thank you very much. We'll note that apology.
Thank you. So I'm Nelia Orlandi. I'm in the budget office. I'm responsible for policy analysis in the office. My colleague next to me, Dumisani Janchis, is responsible for the finances in the office at the moment. So we'll start the presentation, or I will start the discussion, but Dumisani will also come in to provide some clarity if you have any questions to us. So just as an introduction, the appropriations bill was tabled by the Minister of Finance, and it provides appropriations for money for the requirements of the state per vote or department. The proposal set out the purpose for each department and main division, which is also the other, in other words, per program, expenditure per program and economic classification items, and specific amounts that are listed for just specific and exclusive expenditure. Just to show you the layout of the bill, I thought it's, I don't know, I'm sure you all have looked at it, but just to explain some of the terminology in the bill, this is just an example of the presidency. So just below the presidency, is the purpose of the presidency. So what we want you to focus on in terms of the purpose of the vote is that all money that's been allocated or appropriated and what you're going to approve must be for those purposes, because this will be law at the end of the day. says the presidency and its purpose. The first program or main division is administration, and the purpose for administration is to provide strategic leadership, management and support services just to the president. So all the money that's been appropriated and that you're going to approve must be spent on for that purpose. And the same with the executive support, that's program two, so that's the second main division. So in terms of the current payment items at the top, you have compensation of employees, which is specifically appropriated just for compensation of employees. Then it's goods and services, interest and rent on land. The last three columns, you will see that's the transfers and subsidies. We will speak about that more. Payments for capital assets and payments for financial assets. Is the last column there. I thought I'll just show you this just to make sure that, and because I'm also going to provide you with the definitions of what is in the bill. So the next one is almost like a duplication, the definition of a purpose. A purpose is a statement that sets out in broad terms the main areas of service delivery for which funds are allocated. It focuses on the legal mandate behind the expenditure reflected in the program or sub-program. And also, what is a program? A budget program is a main division within a department's budget that funds a clearly defined set of objectives based on the services or functions within the department's legislative and other mandates. So you will see, we're emphasizing this to make sure that that we understand that the money that we approve must be spent for that purpose. In terms of the economic classification, we went through that in the bill. And then all the specifically and exclusive appropriations are marked with an asterisk. And those are compensation of employees, the social grants, and all the other grants. And these allocations can only be approved by Parliament. So when you approve these allocations later on in the year, departments will come back with adjustments. Then it's also, again, only Parliament that can approve the adjustments again on those appropriations. The last one is the appropriation to Parliament. It's marked with a double asterisk, and you will find in the appropriations bill, it's only the total number is appropriated to Parliament. The economic classification must be determined by Parliament in terms of the Financial Management of Parliament Act. So what this means is that Parliament must table their own appropriations bill. We haven't seen that bill because then it must also still be approved by Parliament in terms of the economic classification and in terms of the different programs. So the role of the committee, I'm not going to spend much time on this because I think everybody has told the committee already what their role is. But what I want to emphasize is that if any amendments to the appropriations bill, then it must be consistent with the adopted fiscal framework, and it must also be consistent with the Division of Revenue Bill that has been passed by Parliament. And then the committee must provide reasons for all the amendments that they propose. And I can also refer you to slide 5 of the National Treasury presentation. They provide all those reasons in detail in their presentation. But what also is important is to liaise with other committees, because other committees, in specific portfolio committees, might also propose certain amendments to this committee. So Parliament must pass with or without amendments or reject the appropriations bill within 4 months after the start of the financial year. Just also, we spoke about any amendments that the committee proposes must be within the fiscal framework. So I just want to show you, this is the fiscal framework. So any proposals cannot change this in the 2019, that total amount, that is the expenditure ceiling. So any changes cannot change this fiscal framework, and no changes to the total expenditure, which is a ceiling. And this has been approved already. Then I also want to show you just, we said that any amendments, proposed amendments, must also be within the division of revenue. This is a table on the division of revenue for 2019, and what this is showing you is that 48% of revenue is divided, is allocated to the national sector, 43% to provinces, and almost 9% to local government. So again, you must consider this division of revenue. Any changes cannot affect the division of revenue. It must stay like this because this has been approved already. This is just to demonstrate the different proportions, and on the left-hand side, I'm just showing you that the 9% of local government consists of 60% equitable share and 40% conditional grants, and on a provincial level, the equitable share is the bigger proportion that is allocated to provinces, 83% and 17% to conditional grants. In one of the previous meetings, one of the members was interested in knowing whether the appropriations is aligned to the National Development Plan or how the appropriations is appropriate towards the national priorities. So this is just a demonstration of the consolidated budget. The National Treasury already categorized all departments within these function groups. So I just wanted to demonstrate to you, this is basically how the entire budget is split between the different functions. You will see that 11%. I've got an additional slide that I provided to you because I didn't have debt service cost in my previous one, so I thought that will be interesting for the members to know what proportion we spend on. So I added an additional slide or a replacement slide on the previous one. So I added debt service cost, 11% of the total budget is going to for debt. Social development receives 15%, health 12%, and only 4% to general public services. This is just the allocation in the 2019-20, the current financial year. The numbers that you will find in the budget documents provide you with numbers over the medium-term expenditure framework, and you will see there will be changes over the medium term or the average over the medium term. So over time, we will also show you those graphs to show you how priorities change over time. But this is just the allocations for 2019-20. In this slide, it might look very difficult and complex, but what I try to illustrate to you in this slide is just to show that the proportion of transfers from the different departments. So I want to demonstrate that in this slide, almost 70% of the appropriations that you're going to approve for this bill will be transferred from the national sphere. So it's a very difficult process, basically. So you will see, in terms of social development, we approve the appropriation, but social development transfer almost the entire budget to SASSA. So how do we monitor that spending if it's just, and how do we, what do we require from the department to come and demonstrate to this committee on how they spend the money? So the same with most of the national sphere of government. You can see economic development. How do we monitor what we get from the money that we allocate or appropriate to economic development if 85, almost 86% is transferred? The same with human settlement. So what do this committee at the end of the day monitor and evaluate if we don't concentrate on on the transfers. So with this slide, I've actually already spoke about it, but almost 70% is transferred, and the money is transferred to provinces and municipalities for equitable share and conditional grants. We also transfer to departmental agencies and accounts which provide services on behalf of government. Two examples are the National Health Lab Services and the SA Council of Education. There's still a long list, but this is just two examples of departmental agencies. Higher education institutions, it's all the universities. Foreign governments and international organizations, we transfer to public corporations and private enterprises, mainly in the form of subsidies on products and production, that is in the economic sector. We also transfer money to non-profit institutions. We transfer money to social benefits, to households for social benefits, social grants, and we also transfer the NSFAS money. So the remaining 30% of the budget is appropriated towards the management of the national sphere of government, including 2% for capital assets and 2% for financial transactions in assets and liabilities. So again, the 30%, do we monitor the 30% or we rather focus on the 70% that is transferred? This is also just to demonstrate the whole complexity of transfers. I used health as an example. So you can see health transfer money to departmental agencies, non-profit institutions, and all the other institutions, and then even those institutions transfer again. So these are all the grants that we transfer to provincial departments of health. All the grants are... These are the grants, I think it's about 10, but these grants are then also then split between the 9 provinces. So it's so complex to follow the money at the end of the day and to monitor what services that we get, government get, or value for money that we get. The same there, I think it's 9 and 10 year again. It's just to show you in a diagram how complex the transfers actually is and how difficult it makes monitoring and evaluation. This is to show the current expenditure. I wanted to show you, you also had a presentation from the National Treasury of the preliminary expenditure of the fourth quarter. And I highlighted the numbers which Treasury indicated the departments which overspend or underspend on compensation of employees, because compensation of employees is included in current payments. I couldn't get the split. I asked Treasury for specific just for compensation data, but I haven't received it, so I had to use the current payments numbers. So what we're trying to say is that this was the adjusted budget for current payments. This is the actual outcome or the preliminary outcome at the end of the fourth quarter. So you can see under expenditure in 20% in terms of current expenditure. But then if we calculate the growth to the new budget, then we'll see almost a growth from the preliminary outcome of 33.8%. But now this is like a huge growth, 33.8%. But in the adjusted budget, now you will see again the department will reverse that numbers. Then some of that money will be shifted because they know they won't be able to spend all that money. Then there will be shifts again, which will also come to this committee for approval. So we must also think how we can prevent this type of phenomena that happens year after year after year. Because we approved the adjusted budget, we said it's fine, and I haven't went into the detail of the adjustments, but I'm sure some of these departments increased their current expenditure. But now at the end of the day, in the fourth quarter, they couldn't spend, there was still a lot of underspending, but the new budget is based on the previous budget. This is what I wanted to demonstrate in terms of this slide. So just in summary, this is again just summarizing and just demonstrate that most of the money appropriated is basically appropriated and will be spent on transfers and subsidies. Just a few points for this committee to consider is the fourth quarter preliminary results. We showed that in the table. And we've also got a slide further on, additional slide, just to show that some of the recommendations that has been made in the 2018 Adjusted Appropriations Bill, just to illustrate that we must try and prevent that these things and these recommendations occur year after year after year. So we can try and make a difference at this stage already. In the improvement of the appropriations bill. So how can we make any changes? We can provide prerequisites for the 2019 adjusted appropriations. We might approve some of these appropriations, but with preconditions for the adjusted budget or the adjusted appropriations. We can consider whether baseline reductions affect service delivery, consider the complexity within the planning, budgeting, and implementation of services. We demonstrated that almost 70% of the appropriation will be transferred from the national sphere to other spheres or other institutions providing the services for government, and then also to consider the situation within the SOEs. We didn't go into any detail of the SOEs. There will be an additional appropriations bill, but we haven't received. I haven't seen the additional appropriations bill. So thank you, members, for listening to us. We can start the discussion.
Thank you very much for the presentation, and thanks for being here. Honorable Chairperson Karen, you're welcome. Co-chairperson, I will take over from here. According to our program, I don't know if you're done with your whole presentation, because I was expecting Dr. Janji to make another presentation. If there's an additional presentation that he has to make, I will allow him to make that presentation so that we can have a discussion on both presentations, because there are other treasure meetings after this on both houses.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, coaches. Good morning, other members and colleagues. I think there's additional slides really in our presentation, which talks to the issues that we commented on. We thought, you know, come in during questions time, but I could quickly summarize really what this slide is saying. The next slide say what we're looking at is saying, during the adjustments, 2018 adjustments, appropriations, the committee raised specific issues that governments ought to look into them. We thought that when the joint committees are considering the 2019 appropriations, you know, we need to reflect on those issues, whether those issues have been addressed, and how do you go forward with those as a parliament, you know. For example, it's one of the key issues of deal with the, the creation of the employment creation funds, and how far has government went with that. You know, we've seen the preliminary outcomes, and what's the implication of that? I think this also goes to the slides, the previous slides that Nelia showed there. I'll just go back to that slide. The other one. Yes, it goes back to the slide to say clearly some of the concerns raised by the government is that, you know, there's underspending some of these areas, you know, but it's because of some of the challenges, lack of critical posts being filled, challenges with the procurement systems, and so on, other aspects that have been raised. But I mean, the question is, if you keep on appropriating money into the similar structures or similar system, what are the implications? Are we going to see the similar spending in similar areas, or has a bigger plan to address some of the challenges that led to underspending and so on? So I think we're trying to emphasize that sort of when you look at the appropriations for this year, the committees or parliament would necessarily need to take, the government should give parliament confidence that some of these issues would not necessarily be allowed, which would lead to further adjustments, lead to further underspending and so on, you know. So those are the issues that were raised in the committee in last year, and I think we thought it's very important to take those into account. Just go back, to take that. So look, the jobs fund, what's going on there, you know, and has issues been addressed? And as you know, it's one of the bigger issues that the country's trying to deal with unemployment. The issue of PRASA, came up quite a lot last week in the committee, in the joint committee discussions. And clearly, last year, the committee dealt with some of the issues around PRASA. And now, what is government saying? Are those issues being addressed? If there is allocation in that area, the big issue which we raised also is a reduction in allocation. And what does that mean, you know, from the fund to service delivery, or dealing with some of the socioeconomic challenges. But again, you know, what does that mean? Has those issues been addressed? Procurement challenges, and do we know the issues around PRASA as a country? The other issues of water, I know there was a point raised by colleagues from Tajir last week about war on leaks program, and if that leads to underspending the previous year, are we still having issues there, or those issues have been addressed? And has the appropriation for the 2019 take that into account, that the issues are addressed in that regard? You know, so we're highlighting the issue of SA Express was quite explicitly discussed as well in regards to the strategies and ensuring that there's proper management structure in place and so on. And we've seen, you know, the airline struggling, and of course this boils back to other SOEs and some of the challenges were raised last year, and how the allocation in this year or appropriation this year has taken those into account. Of course, I mean, coach, the challenge here is that national treasury, I mean, you're discussing it at the abstract level, at the high level, the concerted level. You probably want to talk to individual committees, you know, prior to this, to say, look, these are the issues we raised last year in public enterprise. What is the committees on public enterprise, what are the thoughts around these issues? And do they still think some of these issues need to reflect, particularly in the appropriations and so on? But, of course, it's a very difficult situation at this stage. But the sense that you're saying here, co-chairs and other members, that if you are going to approve the appropriations, clearly some of those issues that were raised last year, and we've seen in the preliminary report last week, some of those things are still in place. They're still there, some of the challenges, some of the matters that led to departments not attaining some of their objectives or understanding are still there. And I think in the report or in adoption or appropriate, taking into account this solution, given time and other things, that need to reflect, you know, in this regard. That's what the slides say. Next slide, Senelia. Of course, I mean, the next slides will just quickly summarize those slides. Really, also, we've seen reductions in baseline, which has been a trend since last year. But again, this boils also to the issue of service delivery, to say, are the measures in place to ensure that the reductions or reallocations of funds don't necessarily, you know, affect some of the key service delivery aspects, you know, I mean, and how, you know, can government, parliament get comfort from, I mean, like, again, this is engaging with other portfolio committees, but I mean, if we're going to consider these appropriations as core committees, clearly some of these issues need to be taken into account. I mean, another issue also is on infrastructure, economic development, we've seen that one of the key issues to try encourage more infrastructure support in some areas with an expectation that it will create more economic activities, economy will grow, and if you see reductions or reallocation sort of infrastructure areas, what does that mean? And of course, I mean, this boils back to the point that Nelia raised on the transfers, which, I mean, the issue of 70% appropriations being allocated appropriate to transfers and subsidies. I mean, we had a long discussion here last week about this issue, because the point is, again, this boils back to how do we see the role of national government vis-a-vis the role of other spheres, vis-a-vis the role of entities, you know, in terms of service delivery. You know, clearly, when you look at the allocations, only smaller portion of the operations went to the national department, which simply makes a lot of sense. Probably as a policy aspect, you know, the national would focus largely on policy as opposed to more implementation, which implementation probably takes place at other spheres or other aspects of government. But then the question, as Nelia was saying, does Parliament has oversight over 70% of that allocation at this level? Of course, I accept that you probably need to engage with respective portfolio committees in different cluster or aspects, but if appropriations committees are going to approve or consider sorry, she's making a note for me, so that's why I'm laughing. If committees are going to consider appropriations bill, clearly there will be expectation to have an understanding on how does Parliament influence or understand what's happening with that 70%. And clearly at this level, you probably don't have that. It's probably at the abstract level. It's just going to approve the appropriations that is. But of course, respective committees will look into that in detail. But I think our point is that clearly that is not really completely giving appropriations committee oversight over the budget as a whole, because 70% of it is elsewhere. As you see that skeleton that Nila just showed, it shows that you're only looking at 30% of it. The rest goes elsewhere, which if you're appropriate, you don't necessarily look at the 70%. But now, the question is, how do you go about it? That's the point of chance. How do you go about that as Parliament, as a appropriations committee, we have that understanding at this level of where does the 70% go? Does it go where you agree it should go, or whatever the case may be? Take into account the provisions within them, the Money Bills Act there. The last slide? the last slide largely focused on economic clusters. The other slide focused on social and all of that. I think the last point, obviously, we've seen that the one of the points that was emphasized by government last week in the discussion, reallocations or reduction of the baseline, they focus largely on compensation for employees, you know, as opposed to targeting the infrastructure and other kind of expenditure. I think this report that we're saying, it requires quite a broader understanding where government ought to provide Parliament with a plan to say, this is a plan of reductions of employees over the short term, over the medium term, and this is how it will affect the budget, as opposed to having piecemeal, you know, cutting, keep on reducing it, and so on. I think the suggestion is, look, rather have a broader plan. This is what government intends in cutting unemployment, I mean, compensation of employee budget over the medium term, and this is how it affects other aspects. I think that's what we're trying to emphasize there. Maybe, I think, thank you, coaches.
You wanted to have?
No.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Chanji. Before I note members to deliberate on the presentation, let me take this opportunity to remind you members that the work that we are doing now is a continuation of the work that was done by Fifth Parliament. We are just finalizing it. And also remember that the mandate of the Budget Office, hence in the presentation, he's indicating on issues. They are indicating on issues that we have raised in our last meeting, is to outline the budget and also tell us how far we can go. I think there are other interesting issues that he has said, here you cannot do any changes. It has been done because it's a continual process. But there are other issues that you might have identified that you need clarity on, so that when we engage the relevant department, which is Treasury, and take a decision on the appropriations bill, we are really informed. Can I identify members? Raise your hands. I'll give you numbers. I'm still getting used to the names. Number one, number two, three, number four, number five, and lastly, number six, Honorable Karen. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Ashnal Serapin. I'm on the NA Committee, and I won't look at my card this time, I promise, unlike last week. I just have a couple of questions for the Budget Office, understanding that they do have limited capacity and resources. I was wondering if they had had a chance to look at what the total value of debt guarantees to SOEs from the government were, and if they've modeled any likely adjustments to the budget that would come in the next, in the medium term, over the next 3 years, to meet any bailout requirements if these, if any of these SOEs are unable to meet their debt obligations received with ESCOM, but they've raised SA Express, of course, there's SAA and SABC, who also might need additional money from the fiscus. And have they modeled that and where the cuts would have to come from? And have they modeled the impact of a potential default by one of these SOEs on the fiscus as well? Thanks.
Thank you. Number two.
Thank you, Co-Chairperson. Good morning, colleagues, ladies and gentlemen. Zola Mlenzana of the ANC.
Chair, let me premise my questions clearly with the understanding that we are continuing and we have been briefed. And I can now say, Dr. Janjes, I'm beginning now to learn how to draw the thin line between your side and the FSC. At first, I was like, look, they are talking in parables.
They deliberately do not want to actually put their foot down on to say this should happen. Throwing ideas, trying to open our minds so that as we take decisions, Chairperson, who are able to, should have seen, for instance, I think we should be getting an advice from PPO, Chairperson. We cannot lament on the question of monitoring the transfers when you're looking at the percentage, 70%, which is the big chunk of the budget. Now, can we be advised on the how part of it? Look, Chair, you have got 40 votes. Looking at the space and time. Now, on top of the 40 votes, you would have these entities, and which, when you look at them, it looks like that's where the actual work of this committee should be. And say, if we could get a deeper, you know, sense of an advice. If you're not ready for now, it's fine. We are here to stay. We still have 5 years in place. But Chair, when it comes to this preservation, calm down when it comes to Brasa, because we must take a decision. Decision is a must when it comes to Brasa, Chairperson, because here we have to compare. Though not defined, perhaps you'll also assist us. Today you are only, mentioning Brasa. But there is another suffering entity, an entity which we believe that you are disadvantaging Brasa for an entity we believe is not necessarily benefiting those poor South Africans on the ground. When you are talking, for instance, the managing of the tolling and all that, at that level. So if you can, just be frank when it comes to that. The last one, Chair, it may be difficult for them, but they should give us an advice. The perpetual disregard of whatever is raised by committees, and now you have an unchanged scenario to date, but now we have to approve these appropriations. Do we do it regardless of that? If we have to regard that, how do we do it? Bear in mind, this is the curse of the country. We cannot be holding the country into ransom because of, I would say, individuals who are hell-bent on disregarding whatever is brought up by Parliament. Thanks, Chair.
Number three.
Thank you very much, Co-Chair. My name is Oscar Matafa. I'm with the African National Congress in the National Assembly Committee. Chair, I just have two issues that I want to pick up and maybe will culminate in questions. And I have to apologize in advance if the questions that I'll be raising on are trivial, because we are still trying to get to learn the ropes as far as our role is concerned in the committee. Chair, I just wanted to check on the issue of planning, monitoring, and evaluation. In the presentation, the Parliamentary Budget Office indicated that there was a question if whether the budget or the appropriation bill is aligned to the NDP, and the view there is that it is. Now, I think the biggest challenge that we have is on the monitoring and evaluation of government programs and the impact that it has on society. Now, the question that begs, Chair, is if whether the appropriation for planning, monitoring, and evaluation is sufficient to ensure that we have a strong unit that will be able to interrogate the work of government in order to ensure that the mandate of the unit is carried. I mean, the President speaks of the Jobs Fund, and the Honorable Mnenzana speaks about the monitoring of the 70% vis-a-vis the 30% and the 40 budget votes. So I think the role of monitoring in government lies squarely in the hands of the monitoring and evaluation. Hence, I'm asking, is the appropriation sufficient? And second to that, is that from your view, given the current allocation as compared to the previous one, is it proper in which the appropriation bill is being approached? The third question, which is the last one, on the same issue of monitoring and evaluation. I view the budget as the most potent instrument that we can use to transform the lives of our people. What role, if any, did the monitoring and evaluation play or contributed as far as the consolidation of the draft appropriation bill is concerned? Because obviously, if part of their mandate is to evaluate the impact that government programs has on society, they should be listened to a certain extent to say that this is what we think it's required so that the NDP and other government commitments are to be achieved as far as the president and government seeks to. The last one, Chair, is on the issue of the structure of the budget. When you look at the economic development, only at 12% and the majority going for social issues. And I want to pick a very sensitive issue of social grants. They are very necessary, and we think that to address the injustice of the past, such interventions we cannot run away from. But I'm starting to wonder, at the rate at which they are increasing, are we able maybe through the budget to look at an intervention that we can leverage on in order to cushion the impact that it has on the budget? Because my concern is that most of the beneficiaries are now changing form and shape. Initially, the biggest beneficiaries were the golden generation, the grannies, and the older generation. But now, the beneficiaries are becoming younger. And for me, it seems as if we are neglecting the opportunity to skill them so that they are able to contribute effectively to the economy. As a budget parliamentary office, are we looking at ways that maybe we can advise government in terms of what other interventions are there so that we can soften the blow as far as the social structure of our budget? Thank you very much, Co-Chair.
Thank you very much. Number four.
Thank you, Chair. My first question is with regard to process, and again I ask the PBO to please be patient as we get our heads around these new processes that we haven't had a lot of time to get our heads around. Since the appropriation bill was drafted and tabled, we've had a couple of events. We've had the State of the Nation address, we've had some comments about special appropriations that are needed, and we're going to be having a whole lot of debates in Parliament over the next couple of days about budgets and appropriations. I would just like to understand how these issues affect the appropriation bill that's before us, what's been tabled today in the appropriation bill that was put forward. What are the likely impacts of these events? Does it have an effect, and how much impact is it going to have? Are those debates merely, you know, for posturing and grandstanding, or is there likely to be a substantial amendment to any of the appropriations as a result of any of those issues? My second question comes with a bit of background, and I want to go to the discussion we had last week around PRASA and SANRAL, and perhaps say that it's quite easy to sit in Ekurhuleni or Cape Town and say poor people take the trains and rich people drive in their cars on the roads. But that generalization is far from true, and if one goes to the rural areas of Northwest Province and Mpumalanga, Eastern Cape, Northern Cape, poor people are not close to railway lines. That's the bottom line. Railway lines are far away from where people are staying, and a development of a road can be a catalytic developmental event that changes the lives of millions of people in terms of you know, opening up their area. An example is Port Grosvenor, where we drove for 4 hours on a 15-kilometer stretch of road to go and look at a site for a potential harbor. The fact is that if that road was upgraded, it would open up an entire economy in that area that would employ people and have a massive difference and impact on the lives of people there. So my question is, while I see that we've broken things up into compensation of employees, transfers, and also specifically capital, is there any test that the PBO can do or does to evaluate the impact of the spending in terms of developmental outcomes? Is there any way of evaluating it? And I mean, I understand that payment for capital assets is at 1.7% on the table that you presented. The reality is that most of these things are done by trading entities and done through transfers. But is there any way of evaluating what the actual impact of the spending has in terms of developmental outcomes. Thank you.
Thank you. Number five.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you to the Budget Office for the presentation. Mine, Chair, is mainly just comments, and I thank you for your surety that you have given that there will be a continuity as to what the other, the first parliament have worked on the appropriation committee with the findings and recommendations that they have put on. I'm very glad for that assurance, so that that report doesn't become just a report in an office and so forth. Mine also, Chair, is also, it can be discussed on another level and stuff. There are entities that are unnecessary and becomes white elephants and then just draw money from the state and they don't do their function. Maybe one also have to look further into that. Is some of these entities necessary? Maybe it's a discussion for another day and another platform. On your level, and then they alluded to the transfers, Chair, and the adjustments. So I think it's one thing that we need to be clear, looking up upon it, so that these transfers doesn't become too over unnecessary and so forth. So I think they have given us a warning shot that we need to look into the transfers that are happening. 80% of all of the departments are just doing transfers as they please. So I think we should adhere to the warning shot and definitely look into it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. The next person is Honourable Karen.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, an apology for coming late, but there's some administrative issues beyond my control, and the meeting I planned, the people who were meant to meet me came late. So sorry about that. Firstly, obviously, we'll have our party political differences. That's what a multi-party democracy is about. But one would like to suggest that given the perilous state of the economy and given the challenges, this budget, frankly, is a remarkably adroit balancing act. I think there are very few treasuries in the world facing similar circumstances that would be able to do what National Treasury has done. It's quite remarkable. Which is not to say we don't disagree with some of the things. And despite the perilous economic state, I think as the Appropriations Committee, we have to signal to the executive from the outset that there are some things that they themselves have said and we feel very strongly about. So the first would be, and there are other things that will emerge in our report, in our recommendations. The first is on economic development, 12%. It's far too little. It's precisely because we have all these problems that we have to invest more in economic development and infrastructure. How else are we going to get the economy going, right? And in fact, Treasury has been saying for 5 years and more, if you ask the PBO, that they want to move allocations towards economic services. I can recall in 2014, Dick Lady, you recall, this was raised. Secondly, well, there are other things as well, but in our report, we should signal that we, despite the challenging circumstances we have processed this appropriations bill, these are the sort of things we expect Treasury to do. There are other things members will come up with. Secondly, personally, I think we must discuss this, but if you're guarded and not taking over the role of other committees, I really think, Comrade Chair Mashlangu, the other chair came in a bit later, and though I've been around for a long time, it's only beginning to dawn on me how more challenging in some respects. Although the Finance Committee has a lot endless legislation, the Appropriation Committee has a far more challenging task in dealing with how much money goes to whom and monitoring and finance. It's actually quite challenging. It never occurred to me in all these years, now that I'm sitting here for my third meeting. Actually, it's very difficult what we have to do. So the first thing is, I think the other thing my own experience has been, it is extremely difficult to get joint meetings. You have to try very hard, even to get two committees together. As both chairs will remember in the Standing Committee on how we battled. So one of the issues that arises, and I don't know who does this and who has capacity. I know PBO is stressed. I know our wonderful staff, content advisors and researchers are very challenged. But it would help on the eve of this sort of briefing, when we're looking at the appropriations bill, if the chairs can meet with them and decide who does what, that they tell us what, for example, the Public Enterprises Committee is saying about the state-owned entities. What is communication saying about SABC? Now, one of the things we have to think about, colleagues, comrades, we can't close our eye to the SABC. It's completely collapsing, if I'm correct, right? So we need to, at least now with the restraints of time, the two chairs, and maybe the whips or whatever, should get in touch with the communications committee and find out what is going on. What is their take? Because they're looking at the budget vote now of their committee. I think they're sitting even this morning, if the media. So SABC belongs to the public. You can't say, for example, as the minister does surely, that the SABC is an instrument of the Department of Communication. It is not an instrument. It's in law. It's in the Constitution. It's actually a public, it's not a state broad, it's a public broadcaster. And as the Appropriations Committee, we need to confer with the chair there and find out where they are. You see, we shouldn't also, we have the right to be independent of any other committee in fulfilling our role. And they refuse to exercise their oversight. It mustn't stop us from doing so. But at the same time, we shouldn't alienate the committees because we need their cooperation, especially when they've got new chairs and so on. The next point is, I think the biggest challenge we're going to have is, in fact, the state-owned companies. And we can't plunge into taking decisions now with the restraints of time. What we can signal in our recommendations, our concern, and that the committee needs to actually apply its mind. Now, the other thing about other committees, they have, for those of you who are new, you may not know this, but they're required to have quarterly reports. People ask, how can we monitor? For example, on SASA, it's a very good point you're raising, PBO, because the money goes to SASA. How does this committee monitor it? Is it really our task to monitor it? It's actually the task of the social development committees in the NNN to monitor it, and their reports must be solicited by the content advisor or the secretaries or the researchers. I think the committee chair should meet with the staff and decide within restraints of capacity and resources who does what. Because we can't meet, but we can look at their reports. And we can't do it ourselves. It has to be the support staff. Then on the issue of... I think it's very unfair to the Appropriations Committee members who are new because they get plunged in at the deep end. They come into Parliament and this is the, you know, you've got budget votes, but far more challenging is appropriations because it's looking at the budget of the country as a whole. It's not looking at the budget of one ministry. It's looking at the, so if people are floundering, it is perfectly normal, Comrade Chess. As far as it's perfectly normal. We would be in the same position in 1994 when we had to suddenly plunge into looking at the appropriations. But we will certainly do better because next time around we will have the normal 3 months period. This is just done there. The other thing that could be done is to look at the fiscal framework because the fiscal framework provides the parameters within which we look at, you know, the division of revenue and the appropriations bill. So it might help if our committee secretaries contacted the committees on finance and asked for the fiscal framework report. There's no one have time to table it, but at least members can have a chance to browse through its recommendations. Finally, just may I repeat, we will not have to hurtle like this in the way we are under the huge pressures we are under currently. It's only because it happens once every 5 years, depending on when the election is held. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. I have noticed that there's an afterthought from Honourable Dipuo Peters, and I don't know if I read your language well. Honourable Member at the back, you wanted to speak as well. Can I give you and Honourable Dipuo after you, and thereafter I'll give the Chairperson to speak before I do my comments and give to the presenters.
Thank you, Honourable Chair Dennis Joseph from the DA. I want to ask one question. Thank you for the presentations. I want to ask just one question on the last slide 21 about the plans to reduce compensation of employees. Now, as far as I'm concerned, this is as old as the democratic government, last 10 years or 15 years on the agenda. But I think what where we perhaps mistakenly assess what we must do, we think if we talk about compensation of employees, the total cost, we think what Eskom now, we can't do anything, people mustn't lose their jobs. That's what I think we think. And then no one wants to touch it, and that's where it ends until next year. But our responsibility should be engagement with Treasury as to what is included in a total cost. What other non-core issues in departments can be dealt with to reduce cost? The minister the other day, Minister DeLille said there will be no new furniture. That is a direct line in reducing cost. Study tours, furniture, plants, hiring of the most expensive buildings, offices. There's a long list that we can talk about reducing of cost, that more money can go to the poor people, the service delivery, because we must ask ourselves how much money is spent on ourselves. Politicians, parliament, senior officials, departments, I think we must not shy away from this debate, because we have a lot to say about the bad about apartheid, but we inherited this gravy train. And we are on this gravy train. We must not shy away from it. We, all of us. And this is where we must start to speak the truth language. There's a lot of people in the state that earns money against those who don't earn money, the millions out there. So I think we must be realistic. Ask Treasury, or whoever we must ask, to take the responsibility of compensation of employees. And yes, we don't want people to lose their jobs, but there's so long list of nice to have that people doesn't want to give away, which was possible in the good years of the economy. Then we give. There's nothing wrong with that. But we're not in a good space as previous minister and the chairperson of the committee said, Karinga said. We're not in that space. So we need to be realistic to ourselves and to the people of South Africa. We owe it to them. We must start this process. Thank you, Chairperson.
That's the longest one question ever I have experienced. And when you preamble to say, I have only one question, I thought you were going to be short. Very much anyway.
Sorry,
no,
Chair.
It's fine.
Sorry, Chair. I think you must also donate his salary, his 1 month salary.
Come on, Natasha. Can I give Honorable Zipo Peters?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And my apologies for indicating late that I wanted to say something. Chairperson, maybe I must take off from where Honorable Joseph ended with regard to the item on compensation of employees. I think if I'm wrong, you'll correct me. I heard you say that this has been a recurring problem, year in, year out. But there must be a point where it is up to so far and no further. Because we cannot afford to listen every time to a statement that says departments are actually using the budget item compensation of employees as a piggy bank or a bank where they can reserve money for which they have not yet determined what to do with, and later on request for transfers. If that is the case, then it means there is even something wrong from the side of Treasury in not being observant and ensuring that that does not happen. And I believe DPME from the Presidency, as a department responsible for performance monitoring, as well as the Department of Public Service and Administration and a National Treasury, needs to deal with this particular aspect so as to make it possible that we don't have this recurring tendency from time to time. Secondly, the one thing that I think it was a colleague next to Mr. Matafa, that Honorable Matafa, that raised the issue of the roads in the rural areas. I think whilst this is water under the bridge and is an old thing, a last quarter matter, and we are now in the third quarter of the new budget, I think it needs to be on record that we cannot, as this committee, have a situation where we agree that I understand other matters of PRASA not spending on their monies and the need for it to be used elsewhere. But the principle of taking money from non-toll, not to tolling in general, but to e-tolling, it's for me something that we need to deal with. And I'm happy that in the public space there's this engagement between a national treasury and a department of transport. And I would want to say that it's not actually supposed to be department of transport together with housing, because this has far-reaching implications as opposed to a housing matter only. But also, the solution that is being looked on right now is not going to address the long-term situation. There's a bigger program called the Gauteng Freeway Improvement Program. And e-tolling, this that is being discussed in the public space, is phase one. There are other phases that are still outstanding. And the roads are getting decayed as we speak, and they need to be maintained and repaired and all those type of things. So I'm just raising it that for non-tolling money to be used or funds to be used for e-tolling phase one, It's something that we need to look into. But the issue related to PRASA and National Treasury dealing with PRASA being supported by the department to deal with the capacity issues, I think we should broaden it out, taking from what Honorable Karim said, to look at the total SOE review process that the country embarked on, and there was a process that was going to help. And I think it is about time that whatever emanated from that review process must be implemented. But again, I want to recommend that the issues under PRASA would need DPME performance monitoring as well as National Treasury to work together with the Department of Transport with regard to this particular issue, but also to look broadly into or equally into other SOEs. The issue related to the baseline reduction under social development for SASA, I think it has both a positive and a negative. Positive in the sense that it might be that our social security beneficiaries are graduating out of the grant system, and therefore there's a need for reduction, or alternatively, there are people that are getting missing somewhere. The budget is this much, but it does not reach that number. I'm raising this. Many of us all come from the door-to-doors and the engagements with the voters. And you find in South Africa a household that has got X number of children. Honorable Chairperson of SCOA also was in one of the area with myself, where people, they are not getting a grant. You ask yourself why, yet there's so much services. Children are, you know, I almost use the Northern Cape word, but the children are neglected, and we always pride ourselves that we act in the best interest of the child. So it is important that we look into that. The other thing, lastly, Chairperson, I support the issue of the revisiting of the breakdown of the economic classification of the budget. 12%, we cannot. We tell ourselves that we want to fight the triple challenges of unemployment, inequality, and poverty. How do we deal with it if we don't create the support, the economy? We need to take money from other areas and support the areas that grow the economy so that we can then have less and less of our people dependent on social security. So I think it is important that we follow up on what Honorable Eunice Karim said. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members, like I said when we met for the first time, I said we will benefit more in the experiences that you all have, in the exposure, the skills, we'll learn from each other. And from what I'm sensing is that as a team, we are now having that understanding of the role of the PBO. There's no more confusion between the mandate of the PBO and Treasury. So I really appreciate that we are getting there. We are getting there. We'll still have other sessions. But Chairperson, Co-Chair, there is a slide that honorable members, when they spoke, they covered most of the things that I have identified. But there's this slide that is on the board now. This is a very serious slide. Dinel, Prasa, SAA, ESCOM, SAPC, these are the SOEs that we have discussed, raised concerns about them in our previous meeting. And over and above these that have been identified, there are still others that need our attention. And Honorable Karim correctly stated that he has just realized how much work we have. We have so much work, and it's going to be difficult. Nobody must be mistaken and think it's going to be a smooth sailing. Because for us to get other committees to join us and have a joint program, it's going to be difficult. Some committees might want us to join them, follow them, and all that. So it might not be as easy as is now. But then, Chair, I have this question to PBO. In line with what we have raised last week, in line with what Honorable Dipo Peters have raised and other members on the issue of PRASA, the shifting of money from non-tolling to the tolling roads. Compared that, I think it will go in line with slide number 20 on the second presentation, bullet 2. You see that? I have just seen on Business Tech that in as far as infrastructure is concerned in the process, 41% did not develop or approve road maintenance plans. They did not have a road maintenance plan. 41% of that. And 26% did not develop or approve priority list for road infrastructure maintenance projects. And this is what is killing us. We build infrastructure, we develop infrastructure, but we don't have maintenance plan. That is a problem. Who do we expect to come with a miracle and maintain that infrastructure for us? Not to age. 31% did not assess condition. Okay, that one is on sanitation infrastructure. But then my request is that just compare what we are raising and what we have identified together with what the AG have commented in as far as these issues are concerned. Because at some stage, according to Business Tech, there's where concerns are raised in as far as the quality of the financial report, expenditure reports are. There's a lot in that statement. Too heavy. And it goes back to what I had said, to say the clean audit, does it speak to the outcome, the service delivery? So if we have poor quality expenditure report, what do we expect in terms of service delivery? Do we have the right people to do the right work? And who's supposed to identify that? It goes back to us to do oversight. So I'm just requesting from PBO to talk to those things, because to a certain extent I think they will help me, and other members will also benefit from your input. Thank you. Over to you. No, don't worry, I'm sharing. I've given to you.
Thank you, Chair. I'll make a few attempts and then Dumisani can add to what I've said. The first question was about the debt guarantees. At this stage, we haven't done like a real brief or summary in terms of that. We did last year, we did something, but I promise we will include a summary of all these guarantees in our pre-MTPBS presentation. Normally in that presentation, with the sky's the limit, we can bring everything over time that we've heard, which are issues for members. We try and address within that presentation. We also have the floor to ourselves then at that stage, and then we can discuss, we can do some work and discuss that. In terms of the advice monitoring of 70% of 40% of votes, it's going to be very difficult, and I think Honourable Karim also provided some of his views on how the committee can try and make it easier, because there's no ways that this committee can really go into all the transfers and monitor all the transfers. But this also then brings us to a much, much bigger issue in government in terms of the processes that we follow. Is this the right way of doing business? Is this process that we follow in terms of our public management to create efficiency and effectiveness? Because that, at the end of the day, there are a lot of recommendations in terms of, I think Honourable Joseph also spoke about it, less stationery, less entertainment, all those kind of items. We looked at those items, and Treasury tried, but when you do the calculations, the savings is a drop in the bucket. Perhaps this is a bigger discussion in terms of how government do their business to create more efficiency and effectiveness. The decentralization of services was supposed to create that methodology or method that we use for efficiency and effectiveness, so that a smaller entity or state-owned entities provides the services on behalf of government. I know there was research done, I don't know if DPSA or National Treasury did it, in terms of all the entities and service providers that we use in government. Is that still the way that we need to do our business? Or are there other more efficient ways of spending our money, or in terms of public finance management? We've done a bit of research in terms of that, and we've tested it against the National Development Plan as well. So those results we can also come and present at a later stage to this committee, because that can also be regarded as one of the blockages for policy implementation, because we don't actually have a handle on all those services that are provided. We don't have a handle on the monitoring and evaluation. We don't have a handle on all the reporting and all the services that are provided by other institutions. So the decentralization has gone so far that we've almost lost the handle on where and what services are provided. I think, and that came out from a lot of the members after our presentation now in terms of the questions. Honourable Oscar asked the whole thing about monitoring and evaluation. Research has also shown that it's more effective when the monitoring and evaluation and the planning units are together with the budgeting unit. At this stage, the process has been split. The one is in the presidency and the one is in treasury. So that might also be more effective and efficient if we could have it in one unit. This is what I've read in research in more than one source. And the alignment of the NDP, when we do our NDP presentations to the committee, we can talk about it. In terms of budgeting, you know that there's no budget allocated to the National Development Plan directly. It's indirectly through the National Treasury that categorize departments within function groups, and then we try to link the function groups with the different outcomes. But if you look at the management structures in terms of the planning and the departments that are responsible for the outputs in terms of the NDP, those departments are not the same departments that are categorized within the budget function groups. So that we can still come and present to members those findings, because we've done that research and we've done that detailed analysis in terms of the alignment of the NDP with the budget. The structure of the budget and the reprioritization, that is a very difficult situation because there are all these trade-offs. Honourable Karim also spoke about it, but we haven't seen any drastic moves in terms of reprioritization. We've got all these mandated functions of departments, social, health, education, but then we also want to grow the economy. So are there perhaps the money is not there? We don't want to make a trade-off between education and economic development, perhaps, but we can try and look further and do further research how we can spend the money more effectively and efficiently. Number four, the appropriations bill saw no impact. The impact of all these events. So we had the whole process, the adjustments budget, and now we're only doing the appropriations. We had two SORNAs. I think we will just have to keep an eye on it because, the new budget or the medium-term budget policy statement might be based on the current SORNA. So we will, when we do our NCBBS analysis and presentation to this committee, we will also try and draw the line between of the priorities mentioned by the President and what is prioritized in the medium-term budget policy statement. The EFF mentioned the unnecessary entities. I think that is the bigger question and the bigger research. I'm almost sure there was a report. I'm not sure if it was from DPSA or from National Treasury, but there was definitely research done in terms of that. And perhaps we can also ask DPSA to come and report back to us. Honourable Karim provided a lot of information and comments. Honourable Dennis, the plans to reduce COE and all the efficiency measures, there has been, I've spoken about the efficiency measures, but we did the calculation and, trying to reduce stationery and you can see differences, but we can also monitor that. In many departments, you can also see in the budget that pull that in terms of the recommendations or the rules by National Treasury to reduce or not increase the budgets for entertainment over the medium term, but come to the end of the year, then you can see there's a it goes up again, because they can make changes during the adjusted budget, and at the end of the year they do virements. And I actually forgot to mention the whole story about the virements that we also need to sort out with the National Treasury, because in terms of the specifically allocated appropriations that Parliament approved in the adjustments budget, at the end of the year, the shifts that's been done, or the virements, has been approved by the National Treasury. But it was specifically appropriated in the adjusted appropriations, and specifically in terms of COE. But now, at the end of the year, financial statements, there's underspending in COE. They move it underspending, and then they just move it away, or to underspending in other in other items, and then Treasury approves that. So we need to get clarity on whether that is legal for Treasury to approve those virements, which were specifically appropriated. There was a long discussion, Honourable Peters, also on the recurring. Yes, every year we see in the adjustments budget, COE, and 1 year we had that COE was actually moved to buy new motor vehicles. And I mean, then it was approved, so how can this committee prevent that happening again? COE should actually only be moved or shifted for to households to pay for leave, abatements, and that kind of thing, which is almost the same purpose. That's why I also focused or try and highlight the whole thing about the purpose of an appropriation. If the purpose, and we approve that appropriation for that specific purpose, and now during the adjustments, we just make it null and void, and we allow those shifts to happen. It was also the DPME issue and M&E, the whole roads thing. We don't have answers on all of those things, but I know during the adjustments last year, there was a huge debate about the Praza moving money. But if you listen to Treasury now again, the explanation is that Praza also have allocated funds that's lying there. They have that they haven't spent. So it also doesn't make sense to just appropriate more money and more, and they just accumulate funds and they can't use it. And what I've also told my colleagues, you must also have a the bigger picture, just not looking at this one event. In the negotiations and IMTEC discussions, what Treasury has with departments, sometimes they do reduce the budget in a specific year, but when they negotiate and talk about it, that money might be allocated in the outer year to give the department or the entity the opportunity to get their ducks in a row, to appoint people, to make plans so that they can spend it in the outer year. So one must also get the bigger picture and look at the medium-term expenditure framework of those specific departments. The baseline reductions in SASSA, I think it's time that this committee also look into the model that SASSA uses to determine their budget, because every year also we see they ask for the money, we appropriate the money because it's the right thing to do, but during the adjustments budget they return money to the revenue fund they can't spend. It's unspent, and then you will also start seeing some of the moves in the adjusted budget. Even now at the end of the year, one can see that there were unspent funds. So perhaps we must look into the model that they use to estimate the budget over the medium term. Slide 17, SOEs, PROs are shifting off money. I can't promise, but we can try and look into that whole issue and come and present some of the findings in our pre-MTBPS and have a further discussion on that. Road maintenance, infrastructure, all those things. you know, there are so many work done by the National Treasury. They have an infrastructure unit. There are so many databases and reporting required. And so I don't know why it doesn't work, because there's a whole system, perhaps Treasury, I don't have the detail, but Treasury might answer. They have an infrastructure unit. They have detailed plans. We allocated this. There's such a lot of grants that's specifically just for roads, specifically just for infrastructure. So why doesn't that process work? Because the grants are specifically just for that, and there are rules in terms of how you must allocate. A certain percentage must be spent on maintenance. So Treasury can also come and explain that whole process that they've put in place and introduced for departments, for provincial departments, in terms of a whole system, how to manage infrastructure and roads and projects. And it's very complicated. I can't explain it to you, but perhaps Treasury can come and explain it to you, because it's there. The processes and systems are there. So we need to find where the black blockages are. Thank you to Ms. Thorn, if you can ask.
Thank you, Nelly. I think you've covered everything. You can go now. I think the co-chairs, the appropriations was tabled in February with the budget, which certainly refers to some of a lot of issues. Then, you know, so it doesn't necessarily cover some of the aspects. I think it's a good opportunity. What we're trying to emphasize is a good opportunity to look into some of the issues that came up from the Fifth Parliament. And I think we see this as a great opportunity for committee in the planning process to say, over the short term, medium term, and long term, which some of the issues that you would want to consider over the Sixth Parliament, as the Honourable Member was saying. And I think the point, what we emphasise, the issues around the follow-through on some of the aspects that are raised. But I think before I continue, Co-Chair, I just want to clarify, we're not saying adjustment appropriation is not, okay, let me put it positively. I think adjustment appropriation is part of the budget process. So we're not in a way saying by adjusting, it's a bad thing. You know, adjusting, but we say it's part of the budget process. It's within the public financial management structures and so on. That in some point in time in the year, there must be adjustment moving around of the funds and so on. So we're not. I think the issue is to say, how do we become more effective? Not you know, adjusting the same thing over time, which also, to a certain extent, you know, requires Parliament Committee to look into how some of the amounts, of course, you know, are determined, you know, over time, and some of the issues that some of these affect the amount. Right. Of course, it's issue of dwelling quite substantively into the budget process. But I think it does raise the question: say, how do you make sure that you don't have a similar outcomes of underspending or overspending or whatever the case might be, without realizing that? And I think for me, that's one of the points trying to emphasize: say, look, out of these issues, what can the committee do with given time, and given a limited time, and largely to put them in the report as part of the following the adjusted appropriations. I think the issues around the sixth parliament and so on will come in using the adjustments or MTPS period. There was this SOE review commission report that was tabled 2011. And, you know, it's probably worth relooking at some of the issues, because some of the issues that were raised there are still quite relevant at the stage. And you know, maybe the committee would look into those as well and take that into consideration. One point also I wanted to emphasize, I mean, the question of the role of GPME, And how it does and so on. It's a very important question, and I think it's been come up in the Fifth Administration. But I think that also means the Committee on Appropriations to have its own mechanism at which it oversight over the process. At the same time, how far much does Parliament rely on the executive to hold the executive accountable? You know, you've got to have to try to have that mechanism as committee of the Parliament to say, How do you actually oversee on this process, not necessarily putting heavy reliance on the government, which the committee must perform oversight on? And the issue of evaluation of the impact of the budgets and expenditures is a very important question. Because, I mean, you know, I was quite excited, I think, last week when the committee discussed the fourth quarter preliminary outcome. There was a lot of emphasis on the service delivery. And I, you know, there's been a lot of arguments of should Parliament focus on the number crunching or should it focus on the service delivery outcomes. And I think that's what I got excited that Parliament, the appropriation discussed largely the service delivery as opposed to number crunching. And that's when the AG's work also come in to say what are they showing as the outcome of some of these departments and take this into account as part of your committee's plan. I think it will come quite greatly as important for the committee to look into those, what has been some of the, you know, trend of the outcomes versus the spending of different departments. And you take into account the appropriation, you look into those and focus largely on service delivery outcomes there. I think, you know, that's where we are. I mean, my last point is just say some of there are a lot of issues that's raised, but, you know, the suggestion is to say, I mean, some of them, like Nelia was saying, there are more empirical questions which would require a committee to send specific things, look into this for us, or look into this thing specifically, which links largely to the committee's plan over time, and we can plan it properly without, you know, answering out of the cuff thereof. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Nelly Oland and Dr. Janji. Before I give to my co-chair to speak, I want to repeat what I said last week, and I know it's also difficult for you because you are not allowed to have a view, you know, give us your view and recommend. We just have to read between the lines. You are just throwing it on us. So that's the difficulty that we have to find a way or how we twist your arm and look at our side and help us and benefit more from your existence. I think there's a reason behind the resolution to have a Parliament Budget Office, and it must benefit us more than anyone else. It was meant for us. So the issue of consequence management, the laissez-faire attitude. That's the reason why people are doing things as they wish, because they know nobody will do anything. In our last week engagement with the Treasury said, because we were raising a concern about the condition, to say your condition maybe are not that stringent enough. You need to strengthen and make sure that your conditions are managed and are very tight, so that money allocated for a certain purpose is only spent for that purpose. And if they don't have a plan for that purpose, because you can't just allocate money for people who don't need it and who don't have a plan. And this is what I was raising. And the lady from the doctor from Modise, from Treasury, she said it is difficult. They find it difficult to take actions for those people or those officials who are not spending money based on the conditions. And this goes further down to municipalities where they are given meek condition and use that money for payment of salaries. And it is taken as it has been spent. But what was it meant for? What happened to the money which was supposed to be spent for salaries? We can't allow that. And it must start with us to make sure that we assist Treasury, we assist whoever is responsible, more especially the voters out there, because they have put all the trust on us. So I'm going to allow Honorable Coach Honorable Buthelezi Sheng to speak last on the matter.
Thank you, Chair, and let me welcome the report from Ms. Oland and Dr. Janshis. Perhaps my observation and Honorable Masang and Sangwin and Eunice, you'll agree with me that I've been amazed with the speed with which the new members have grappled with issues, and they understand what have been raised here are the real issues that year in, year out are being raised. So I think we're on the right path as far as that is concerned. And I think we, understanding the problems, I think we need to spend more time in saying how do we help resolving those problems and challenges. I think we need to spend more time on that, because the challenges, I think they are well understood, and you've been able to lift them up. I think if you listen to us, there are a lot of things that we keep on saying, National Treasury should do this, National Treasury should do this, and so on. My little experience is that there's just too much we keep on throwing onto the National Treasury's plate. Government is bigger than National Treasury. And one thing that does, it puts National Treasury into a collision course with a number of other departments, where National Treasury is seen as it will be accused of seeing itself as a super department. Right, there are responsibilities of National Treasury. They are there in different legislations, and they should carry those things out. But government is bigger than that, and people are responsible for those other departments, whether it be executive or committees and so on. They must do their work also. Perhaps one thing I just wanted to, when realizing the magnitude of the responsibility of the committee, I think the three of us who have been at the Standing Committee on Finance agree that there's bigger responsibility here than at finance, because all these things come here, and if they don't happen, we appropriate the whole budget, and we also must see to it, follow money and so on and so forth, and see whether it is being properly and efficiently used. So I think it's one thing that we should appreciate as we engage with this with this responsibility. I think one thing, again, I would like perhaps the budget office perhaps to help us. I don't know where I'm going to get it, but I think I've also asked Treasury, because one thing we have never dealt with, it's a what we'll call opportunity cost of money not being spent, right, widely in the economy, where people come here and they ask for this money and so on, and it gets banked there. Mm-hmm. And that money could have been used by another department properly and efficiently. So I think we need to know that. There is a proposal which I think makes sense coming from Ms. Ola, the question of the monitoring and evaluation and budget being in the same place. Mm-hmm. But the problem that creates, which I don't think is insurmountable, is that somebody becomes a referent and a player at the same time. The idea and the rationale behind separating them was that you should be having budgeting somewhere and monitoring and evaluation somewhere. But having said that, it doesn't mean that they should not work together. I think they can still continue executing their responsibilities without any institutional relationship, because they are related. But I just wanted to say that was the rationale of separating the two. There's no doubt that we should be working together with other committees. The challenge again is to how do we do it, given the confines of time. But one thing we cannot afford is to work as silos. It won't work, as we can see. I think Honorable Karim has suggested, for instance, even as a start, to see what happens, for instance, when the chairs come together. And again, where you allow other committees to raise red flags, that must also be looking at, because with the best of intentions, we can't look at everything. But red flags from the committees, they should be able to raise them, so that we should also help and come in and see how we how we define ourselves in that in that process. I think most of these reports that we get, monitoring and evaluation should always be part of it. Whether we receive the, I think it happens with SCOPA. But as you can see, we keep on saying what's the impact of this, what has happened, and so on. So I think as they present these reports, the department, I think we should also be having a monitoring and evaluation. As you would see, whenever we deal with these budgetary issues, I think most of the time we deal with one side of the problem, and it's on the part of consolidation and not spending money. It is a problem of saying, where can we cut? Cutting it's important. But the biggest elephant, not in the room in the country, is the economy which is not growing. So, and I don't think we spend more time in saying that, how do we make sure that the economy grows? Because you can cut, there's always a limit to cutting. By the way, cutting itself has got a negative impact when it comes to economic growth. I know in one of the quarters we looked at, when we looked at the contributory sectors as to why the economy didn't grow, or we had a negative growth, it's not this one. It's when we saw that the junior aggregate demand, that is your government spending, government has not spent and contributed. It was below what was expected to, and it contributed to negative growth. So you should also know that there's that element. Again, something that we always rush to, and I'm sure again some colleagues, when government is in trouble, is retrenchments. That's a private sector approach. When it comes to private sector, there are problems. They go for the workers, and it works for the private sector, but it doesn't work for government. Because what are you doing? You are taking people away from productive capacity. You are saying they must go and join the SASA, the grants, because you can't throw them to anybody. They still remain your responsibility that you must pay for them. So I think the tendency is always that because it works in the private sector, it will work in government. It doesn't always follow, because with us as government, having retrenched them, we must still look after those people. By the way, it also has got a direct negative impact in again economic growth. But what happens when you retrench? What happens to your tax? What happens to your revenue? What happens to your fiscal deficit? What happens to your debt? So there's that interconnectedness. Economics speak, they speak about fallacy of composition, which means that what is true for one part, it can't be necessarily good for the whole. So I'm saying, I don't say that everybody who's there must be cared, but you should be very careful to think that the solutions of retrenchments are solutions which can necessarily work for government. There are many other things that as government we take into consideration. Yeah. But honorable members, I think for me, going forward, I think where I really would like us to, I think this thing of us trying to find a way of working together with other committees, I think that's very important. But also the question of us spending more time as to, with this challenge that we are having from where we are seated, and I think the allocation that we spoke about of about 12%, it is an issue that talks to us not really focusing on trying to jumpstart and growing the economy. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you so much, Chair. Any afterthought? I feel like being generous. Anyone with afterthought? Okay. Okay.
Very calm with afterthought. Not for today, but then if the budget office could assist us with a detail of these transfers per department, per entity, and if possible the amount, so that as I said in the morning.
We could also be somehow advised by them. Chairperson
spoke of the red flags.
That could also
be lifted.
So that looking at the
amount of work that we have to do, we can be able to say, with the short space of time that we have, how then do we begin to prioritize things.
Thank you very much. On that note, you have been very progressive. I'm closing on the note that the support staff, I hereby request you to finish members with the 2011 SOE review report so that we can be able on our spare time to go through it and look at the recommendations and see how best we can learn from that and how best can we utilize those recommendations, because I think it was then for a purpose and we must start utilizing it. Can I request that the support staff do that? Thank you very much. The meeting remains closed until tomorrow. Thank you.